Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Food Question is partnering with TD Bank on 5 special episodes about the resilience of small businesses in the face of a constantly shifting pandemic landscape. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. It's crazy out there, folks. Hope you are staying safe and taking care of yourself. Take time to check in with yourself, with your friends. If you feel that a situation is not safe for you or for people, don't feel embarrassed. Just don't do it. Do what you need to do to get through everything. We're all trying to be in this together. So please look out for each other and stay safe. So as we know, COVID hit March of 2020, and in the shuffle, we somehow misplaced an incredible interview from Vonda Asifahu, who is the daughter of the founders and owners, and she's a owner in her own right too, of Ayara Thai in Los Angeles. And I have no idea how we lost it, but we found it, and it is an incredible, incredible interview about family and food and coming together. And I want to say we recorded it right before the restaurant world went upside down, and so we want to play it for you today. It's a beautiful story, and I think the last interview that I did in person, so very special. We're happy to share it with you. And then we have an incredible and such a pleasure to have Tomi on, who hasn't been on Snacky Tunes since she was back on the show with XNY in 2013. She's got a new single out, Lemon Tree. And she has a new EP coming out, what you're talking about. And we talk about childhood, creative process, the inspiration between Sweet Sweet Honey, which is the EP, which was actually never supposed to come out. And it's a great story on how she got there. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes here on heritageradionetwork.org.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
Hello, welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one of your hosts, Darren Bresnitz. I am with Chef Vonda Asifahu, chef and owner of Ayara Thai here in Westchester.
Yeah,
right. Nailed it.
On the first try, right? Wink, 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 wink,
yes,
wink.
Yes.
Thank you so much for inviting me to, I'll say house and home, because this place has been in your life
forever. So I live down the street.
I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, as a kid, I would ride my bike.
This is a really cute street.
It is. It's, a lot of people film on it. If you look back, there's a lot of people who film on
the street. Okay, because you turn on the street, and you're like, oh.
I'm like in Idaho.
Yeah. it feels like Main Street anywhere, but in the best way possible.
Yes.
So you grew up as a restaurant kid.
I've always been a restaurant kid. I grew up sleeping in old, like, broken refrigerators, like the deli refrigerators.
Oh, my God.
Doing my homework at a restaurant, going to bed really late because my parents, you know, need no child care. You have to be at the restaurant, but then they literally move your body like a corpse because you're already asleep into your bed.
Just put her with sacks of flour.
Yes. Or a bag of rice.
What did you learn as a restaurant kid, or what unique perspective did you have that's been a guiding principle for you today?
I think being a daughter of a immigrant entrepreneur, you learn how to be scrappy. You really learn how to make things work when you need it to work. Sorry, there's so much noise.
No, it's fine. It's active. It's real. We love it. Do you find that perspective gave you an edge or an advantage in life to just keep moving forward, to not giving up, to other people who may have said, this is too hard, I can't go forward?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the will to continue on and like in any light, you know, when any lemons are thrown at you, you're able to just overcome those obstacles. And that's definitely from the scrappiness, from being entrepreneur, from being an immigrant. And I don't think any school can actually teach me that, of what I've learned as being part of this family. Yeah. My parents started off, they're both college graduates. Mm-hmm. They moved here we moved the entire family when I was 5, my brother was 4.
They worked for Thai Airways,
yes. And they left Thai Airways and started their own business. My dad at that time thought that it would be fun to service gas stations. So he would do janitorial services for gas stations. Imagine
define being fun.
No one was doing it.
Sure.
No one was doing it, and there's an opportunity to do it. So at that time, we were living in the Pomona area, and he had gas stations that signed up for his service all the way from like Laguna Niguel to Glendale.
Wow.
Yeah, and we would go every weekend, and my job was to scrape gum. So I had to scrape gum in the driveway of the gas station, and he would give me like, I guess, 2 pennies for it. This is in the 80s.
For a piece of gum.
Until the gas station owners were like, no, you can't have a kid because it doesn't look
good. Good. That's not great.
Like
that's
two little great. Kids hop out of a white
and then you're
van.
Like, hey, don't stand between me and my pennies. I need those pennies.
Yes.
So
it's definitely taught me like the value of a penny.
No,
like,
of course.
Yes, you have to scrape the gum.
Yeah.
I think we didn't even have gloves. I don't even know. But yeah.
It was the 80s. It was a different 80s, time.
Yes.
And both your parents had backgrounds of food or knew how to cook before they came to the States. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Definitely. My dad is a son of a chef. Mm. So my grandmother.
Shout her out.
My grandmother, she lived along the Chao Phraya River in Bangkok, which
Amazing.
Is a Chinese immigrant community. So my dad's a double immigrant, China to Thailand, Thailand to the U.S. And she would cook. She cooked in the palace, but she also cooked in a shop house to feed her, to just feed her. There's 8 kids in the house. Yeah, in a 2-story, 2-bedroom like shop house, cooked in the bottom. All the kids went to school, lived upstairs. Everyone contributed. My dad was the youngest, so he contributed a lot. There's a huge age gap.
Right.
And so my dad grew up cooking, grew up understanding food with his mom and within the Thai Chinese community in Sam Sin. My mom was from Northern Thailand, the oldest of 4. So she had to, my grandmother was a hairstylist. She turned her house into a salon.
Amazing.
So my mom would have to cook and put food on the table while her mom was working late nights.
So the entrepreneurial spirit is tradition.
It's in our DNA.
It's in your DNA.
It's woven in.
One of my favorite stories that I came across was that to get the food business off the ground in America, your parents would cook for the rotating crew that came in from Thai Airways, which I love because, one, because of the hours.
Yes.
They came in on off hours and nothing was closed. But also, what's better than to fly essentially across the world and then come to a
home-cooked
meal? Like, I can't think of anything better than that. Because the other option, especially, in the 80s, landing in L.A.?
Greasy takeout,
yeah. Things like that, which is fine every once in a while, but to know that you're going to come and land and have gorgeous, beautiful, fresh dishes, how did your parents run that business?
So we've owned many restaurants. So at that point, there were already 2 restaurants,
yeah.
And they weren't, rent was going up, issues with plumbing and all the horror stories of owning a restaurant in Los Angeles, yes. So they thought it would be easier to run a catering business that serves Thai Airways crew out of our home kitchen. So we transform our kitchen into a catering kitchen, pumped out about 80 boxes of food twice a day. So it's all hands on deck. Any kid that came in to hang out at my house was put to work. My mom didn't allow you to snack or eat until you help pack food.
I thought we were playing Legos.
No,
come and
help.
Spring rolls. Okay, here we go.
Yes, definitely.
But that's amazing though, because that's got to show you again, just reinforcing that takes whatever it takes to make it happen.
Yeah, all hands on deck. Everyone's involved, and that I think helped us learn the fundamentals of cooking. My earliest memories, of cooking cooking rice, using a mortar pestle, which is like the fundamental of Thai food, to make chili paste, to make curry paste.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have had those opportunities if it wasn't for my parents' entrepreneurial spirit and the spirit of putting every member of the family to work.
Now, Thai cuisine has become so ubiquitous in America. What was it like in the 80s? Was there an education process when your parents opened their first, because they had two restaurants and now they have this one here, but they had two restaurants that opened and closed. Did it take a long time to get people to understand what Thai food was?
Absolutely. In the 80s, we had a restaurant in East LA. Okay. It was across from like a Wiener Schnitzel, and we had to label it as Thai Chinese.
Sure.
As Thai Chinese, I think it's a privilege to really cook what you want.
Of course.
And what we eat and to serve it is a huge privilege. We had to cook chow mein. We had to cook orange chicken, lemon chicken, whatever it was, to get people through the door, and then maybe sprinkle in a tom yum or a pad thai along the way, which now is like so synonymous to Thai food.
Oh
like
my
every,
God.
Every one.
Pad thai is now the the slash that gets people in the door for the new.
Yes, the new
like Southeast
Malaysian.
Asian, Malaysian.
Filipino.
Yeah,
or,
Burmese, whatever.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
But
chow mein
the,
was that of
yeah.
pad thai in the 80s.
But what was that struggle like? Like, did your parents, you know, at no point were your parents like, we're giving up on our culture?
They weren't giving up. They still cooked with, you know, the authentic Thai flavors. Even I think our chow mein had a bit of Thai, like chilies and cilantro in it, which you won't find in an American chow mein. So I think they didn't give up. But the struggle wasn't of difficulty putting food. Good food on the table. The struggle was being business owners and having to navigate lease contracts and vendors, you know, who promise to bring you deliver food but never come. So you have to go out and go and buy that food. And so it was always a struggle being a business owner first and not really a chef.
Did people like the food? I mean,
people love the food. We had a following. We mean, we lived in Montebello.
Sure.
The first restaurant was in East LA. Second restaurant was in Montebello. To this day, we still have the people who were our original OG fans dining here. They would drive all the way here. They're a lot older now,
if that doesn't speak to the hospitality and to the food and to the cuisine, how many of those people were introduced to real Thai food for the first time through your parents?
Many of them, yeah. And even before that, if we want to move back, before we even opened the restaurant, we lived in a community with a lot of Thai, Laos immigrants,
mm-hmm.
and everyone had 2+ kids. And so it was really hard to feed everyone in the community. So all of our parents would pool money together and cook together and then make big batches. So as kids, I remember sitting on the floor on a newspaper. I'm like, oh my God. Looking back now, it's like, but it was so much fun. And we would eat like as a family. And it was actually, I asked my mom recently, she's like, it costs very little, probably $5 per family, so that everyone has a quality warm meal. And I think that's just speaks to the like geniusness of being scrappy immigrant entrepreneurs.
Amazing. Well, listen, we're gonna take a quick musical break. Then we're gonna come back and we're gonna talk about you getting involved in the restaurant and then your travels across the world and then coming back home.
I'm excited.
Awesome. Well, we have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Burn.
And welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are with Chef Vanda, and we're talking about her family's incredible Thai restaurant, Ayara. Did I get it?
Yeah. Ayara Thai.
Only 9 tries. So, your parents have the restaurant. They've landed on this location, which is still here today. And you made a little bit of an allusion in the first part about when you started getting involved. But when did they put you to work? How old were you and what do you remember?
So this restaurant was built in 2004. It was right at the time I was graduating college. So my brother and I, and we recruited a bunch of friends, painted the walls. We actually cut out the alcoves with our elephant.
Oh,
yeah, we did
so
all
cute.
Of this. We, you know, mapped it out and cut it out and had someone help picked out all of the tables, chairs, tiles, everything. This was after graduating college. I was headed to grad school, headed to Yale after UCLA. So
humble brag.
It was, yes. And so I had a short summer.
Yeah.
UCLA, I think we got out in June, and I had to go back to school in August, so 1 month. And we were supposed to open during that time. And of course, nothing in restaurant ever goes as planned.
Especially not in LA.
Yeah, so I went, I had to go to school, and I left, and my parents opened the restaurant in late August.
Got it.
So fast forward 4 years from there, graduated grad school. The tsunami happened and was given opportunity. I was in school for public health.
Got it.
Health policy. The tsunami happened, was given an internship, worked through with tsunami relief, met some amazing people, was offered a job back in Thailand after I graduated, went there, then was offered a position at the UN. So I was in Thailand for about 4 years working on reproductive health, tuberculosis, Global Fund
Incredible.
Projects. For about 4 years, got burnt out.
Hold on, before you go back to the States, what did you learn about Thailand and your ancestral roots from being there that really struck a chord with you? Because it's one thing to be immersed in it in a first generation or second generation community in America,
uh-huh.
but it's one thing to be home, like
Definitely.
Really home. So what did you take away from that?
It was a struggle at first because every time I would go back to Thailand, it would be with my family, and it would be family with family.
Sure.
This is the first time as an adult living on my own, which I wanted to do. We have a family house. They could have fed me, drove me, whatnot.
Sure.
No, I wanted to live on my own, pay my own ways. I think traveling by bus in the beginning and then evolving to driving. So I actually drove without a license in Bangkok. That's another podcast. And getting to work. The UN gave me, you know, many opportunities to, one, hone my skills in speaking Thai. My Thai was limited to Thai at home. Like, are you hungry? Where are you going today? What's going on? How was your day? That was a basic. The UN allowed me to really, like, dive deep into the Thai language, using it more in a professional setting, speaking in front of thousands of people.
Amazing.
Using it in rural areas where I had to go and monitor or do training with local health staff and personnel. It allowed me to travel. So my limit on Thai food was always my mom's northern Thai and my dad's central Thai with a bit of Chinese flair in it. I've never really explored, you know, what it is northeastern Thai, southern Thai food. And the UN, obviously, they don't take you to the most developed areas. We always traveled to areas where during the monsoon season, it takes you 6 hours by boat, where it would normally take you only 1 hour.
Gotcha.
So we got there, we would try some wicked, amazing, different type of, you know, this is Thai food, but it's not the Thai food that I'm used to.
No, I mean, it's very regional as well.
Yes, regional, ethnic cuisines. Like, there's some tribal cuisines that we've had up in the northern region. The most southern region, I was in the two most southern provinces that we had to get special clearance to go into because of the civil unrest.
Wow.
And the food there was amazing. I mean, life went on for the people there.
Gotta eat.
What you see on the news is not what you get.
It never is.
It never is. So amazing, amazing experience. And that, you know, only reinforced my love for food, and I wanted to do something. I actually was going to open a restaurant. We were with some friends, open a noodle shop like on the side. We actually procured a cart, got a website up. I think Instagram was really new. We got Instagram up, was going to legit open a noodle shop on the street, was going to possibly open farm rice. My dad like walked me off the ledge every time. I was like, I did not move my family. Nothing against rice farmers. Like, to break your back on this. Like, let's.
And he's like, you're burnt out.
Come home.
If you want to do food, we have a restaurant. So you come home and
I was unemployed.
You're unemployed.
Unemployed. Figuring what I want. And this is like probably in 2009, so 11 years ago.
Right. Post-bust.
Post-bust, yes.
Post-bust everywhere.
Everywhere, and people weren't hiring. Applied for a few jobs, got it, but asked them to hold off. Don't let me in yet for about 3-4 months.
So
I need to travel.
So the idea wasn't to just come back and come into the family business.
No, it was not. I wasn't ready. I knew that coming to the family business was inevitable one day.
Sure.
But I didn't think it would be this soon. So I traveled South America for a good maybe 6 weeks with my siblings. Best trip of my life.
Yeah.
Best trip.
What did you learn there?
To love my siblings. We were away for so long from each other. I always tell my parents, like, the best gift they gave us is each other.
Mm.
And to love each other, to always support one another. And I mean, I'm sure it's the same with you.
Mm-hmm.
There's days that you hate each other.
Mm-hmm.
And there's days like you know that no one has your back like your siblings.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine life without them.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And so we struggled. We like hiked, we backpacked, we hung our underwears because it didn't dry, you know, on our backpack and walked. We made fun of each other. We made each other cry and laugh at the same time. And really, like, what is life about? Like, am I going to travel somewhere else to work, or do I want to be here and like witness my sister and I are 12 years apart. So, like,
wow.
I missed her growing up. I miss being a part of that. I miss my brother, who's a year younger than me, you know, through his struggles and whatnot. So I'm like, I really want to be home. So I gave up the opportunities to take on those other jobs, kind of regrouped and try to decide what I wanted. Meanwhile, this is like during the growing pains of restaurant. I think we were in year six, year seven.
Yeah.
And there were legal issues. So we had many legal issues, whether it's tax or labor laws. My parents would just hire anyone, didn't care whether they had any documents, paid them, you know, under the table, whatever was negotiated. And for many people, it worked. You know, we saw a lot of people have a good livelihood. But obviously, Uncle Sam wasn't being paid for all of the taxes, payroll taxes. So we had a lot of legal issues. And so I spent a good maybe 3 months during that time lining all the ducks up, setting up their business, reconfiguring what we would do with, you know, payroll, how we would bring in each employee, what training program, what they have to sign, contracts, healthcare.
Hmm.
Wanted to provide healthcare. So I think this speaks on like a lot of my parents have always been entrepreneurs. The struggle in America is not the idea, is the executing without falling into these legal debts.
I mean, how much did you, I don't want to say fight, because that's not the right word, but...
Struggle through?
Well, with your parents about being like, okay, you've been doing this business, you've been in the business for yourselves for 10, 20, 30 years, we want to bring this into the future somewhat, or modernize it, or make sure everything's above water.
Yes.
And I'm not telling you that you're wrong, but I'm saying like...
Oh, yes. It was hard.
You know
what
I mean?
To convince my dad, like,
yeah.
Well, we did it this way. Could we just continue doing it? You know, I'm not proud to say this, but like some employees even wanted, I don't want to do payroll. Like, I seriously don't want, I want cash. Could you just do half payroll, half cash? I'm like, no, we have to do it all or nothing. Like, I don't want you to be butthurt in the future and come back to me and sue me because I gave you cash and you weren't on it. And you were, you know, partially employed and not fully employed and didn't qualify for healthcare, workers' comp, or other benefits that you should have had. I don't want that, you know? And I think my parents were just really easy with everyone.
Oh,
and
sure.
Really wanted to just come in. We need
yeah.
help. We had, you know, and everyone was happy, but we didn't want that. And I struggled with my parents, you know, like doing them seeing how much tax was at the end of the year and how much payroll tax and all, and compared to what they paid before. Obviously, that all of that overhead operational costs all went up when I entered. It wasn't easy to be the bearer of bad news or the police, you know, and how to police this business.
But what's the end result then?
Where we picked ourselves up, we paid off everything, we overcame all those legal battles, and we purchased this building.
That's amazing.
We were renting for a long time.
Right.
And so we were able to buy this building.
And now you have a place for not just today, but tomorrow.
Tomorrow. And yeah. If one day we, you know, decide not to want to cook anymore, we still have this building. I mean, I think that's the American dream, to own property.
I think that is actually what, right? I've learned is that it's a real estate game.
Yeah. It's a real estate game. Like they teach you when you play Monopoly.
Yeah.
But it's really like, this is a life game. You need it. That yeah. Monopoly. It doesn't matter the business that you put in, but to own real estate is key.
So, in addition to bringing business acumen to the restaurant, did you bring any dishes or any perspective from your food travels in Thailand?
Definitely. Some of it was, you know, things that my parents grew up eating, or us eating at my grandmother's house in Thailand, and or we ate it all the time at our house, but we never just, you know, wanted to put it on the menu simply because they didn't feel it was elevated enough. It wasn't fancy enough. A dish that we tried putting on in 2004 when we opened this restaurant was khao soi. And I had some amazing khao soi in Thailand. Came back, I'm like, why don't we put it on? And they're like, oh, we did it before and it didn't work, and why would we do it again? It didn't work then. And now khao soi is like the pad thai replacement for all the hipster like Thai places in New York and in LA.
I would say that is the dish that if people want to prove
That they're Thai.
Or just like, no, a Thai menu.
Yes.
Yeah. Myself equally is guilty. But it's so warm and comforting.
It is warm and comforting. It is warm. And now we want to expand on that. Like, we cook Thai, you know, home-cooked food. And there's dishes like cabbage, stir-fried in fish sauce, which, like, it's basic. It feels basic, but to cook it well, you need a really hot wok.
Yep.
You need quality fish sauce. You need to know where to drop the fish sauce and when to lift it, and you have to eat it immediately. Dishes like that is like home comfort food.
I love that.
That like my parents would never dream of putting because it just seems so basic to them. But you know, we decided to put it on and got really good feedback from the Westchester community, the Los Angeles community, to come in and continually dine.
It's interesting of what people might consider basic, but it just is sort of authentic, which is a complicated word.
Yes, and I hate to use the word authentic.
I know, me too, but I haven't found a better word. Honest, maybe it's more honest cooking.
Genuine's
maybe a better word. It's like, this is genuinely what we eat. Like, not everything is this complicated, intricate.
Right. And I don't
process.
I can't say that this is exactly what you'll get in Thailand. And people come in all the time. They're like, this is not what I get in Thailand. I'm like, well, what you get in Thailand, we living in California, we have some of the freshest produce, the best meats. Like, I know legit, like, some Thai folks who bring USDA meats, like, in their luggage to Thailand and then make it in Thailand.
And you find the same in K-Town as well.
Yeah, and where the Koreatown, where the meats are, like, of higher quality than in Korea. Yeah. So you're going to yield something even different in flavor and in value. And I don't ever claim that this is exactly what you're going to eat in Thailand, but this is exactly what you'll eat when you come to my house here in L.A.
But, you know, when you were talking about going to those villages and eating, you didn't say locally, but it is locally in these small, you know, they're not going to a market 50 miles away. There is a very similar approach in California where it's like you just source where the farmer's market is or down the street.
Absolutely.
And in many ways, at least the parallels in the approach to cooking is the same, while the flavors may not be, but it's like we're just going to cook for the village, which is Westchester or K-Town or East LA or something like that.
Yes. I think someone said, I wrote a Yelp review for us, Ayara is where you come to please your Asian mom and your white boyfriend.
Ah, that's pretty
good.
So
that's like, I want to put it on a t-shirt.
I think you should. I mean, restaurant merch is the whole...
Just get
a crew neck sweatshirt and just put it on there.
No, but I do. I mean, I feel that I would never put a dish out that my parents would not approve of in terms of flavor.
Sure.
In terms of flavor. Some things, like I did a Thai ceviche. They're like, what's ceviche? And I'm like, Dad, it's just like yam tale. You know, but in a with avocados and a little bit more of a Spanish flair. And he's like, okay, he ate it. He's like, oh, I see it. It has Thai. The flavor profile, you know, it layers out.
There's
the tart, the saltiness, the spice. I'm good. Like, he was good with it. So I would never never put anything out that my parents would not eat. But at the same time, it like reflects us growing up in LA with, you know, a bag of chips and some chili, like Frito chili during lunch, or a corn dog. And that is as much like me as a like a bowl of curry.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you for this
on everything. Of course, where can people go to visit the restaurant, buy any of the sauces that you guys make, or if they just want to see the awesome food you make online, where can they go?
They can go to our Instagram at Ayara Thai, and from there they can go to our website, come in to dine with us. So Instagram at Ayara Thai, AYARATHAI.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We have another song from the archives and then a live performance here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Like your head is upside down. You like my goldfish in a bowl, but still your life goes on and on. I'm always running, yeah, always running. Always running around. I was never like them keys, because my mind was never still. It's like an ocean running wild, yeah, always drifting from side to side. My moon is running.
The Big Food Question is partnering with TD Bank on five special episodes about the resilience of small businesses in the face of a constantly shifting pandemic landscape. We cover avenues for accessing grants, loans, and financial services through federal and local government programs, as well as via nonprofits. We examine the benefits worker cooperatives present to workers, communities, and our food system, and share resources to learn more about operating under this model. We're talking to business owners who started pop-ups and became permanent during the pandemic to see what we can learn. Don't miss these episodes. Subscribe to The Big Food Question wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks to TD Bank for supporting this programming.
Tomi, welcome back to Snacky Tunes.
It's good to be back. It's good to be back again.
We're not gonna keep the charade up. We already had a conversation, and the universe said it was good, but I think we can get great, and so we're sitting down again.
It's take two.
Take two with Tomi. So Congratulations. Lemon Tree is out.
And she's alive. She's well. She's thriving.
She's thriving. It's been out now for a week.
Yes. She's 1 week old.
Is your baby walking yet? And how does it feel as a proud mother to release this track into the world?
She's talking. She's walking. She's really feeling herself. She came together really quickly as an adult. She's just like, you know, she's a sensitive woman. You know what I mean? She has a lot to say. She's like, you know, she's a 7-minute, 40-second song. You know what I mean? There's depth there.
You know, when I think of 7-minute songs in my life, I think of Stairway to Heaven.
Yep.
Think of Only in Dreams, Weezer. And now I have Lemon Tree. What's the story behind this track? What did you want to say on this epic journey?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's so long, like, in time-wise, because it's split into two parts. And I really wanted it to start with this kind of reflection process and really, like, looking into memories and what we want to remember, what we don't want to remember, like, how to remember the small, mundane moments, like, just things like having a glass of wine or just laying in a hammock, these, like, really beautiful, simple moments. And this was written about a relationship that has since dissolved. And it was just a reflection about that time and kind of just paying homage to the time that we had together. And the second half of the song is this plea for forgiveness. It's all about forgiveness and regret and just, you know, growing up and realizing that everybody makes mistakes, and it's really tough to have an open, honest relationship. I think it takes a lot of work, which I've learned just by messing up a lot. But this song is really just a representation of that. And like, and that love stays. It doesn't leave. Like if it's like real love, I think it just stays with you, which is beautiful to me. Mm,
that is a beautiful thing. You know, it's been a journey for you to get to the solo project, because the last time we had you on was last week, but the time before that was back in 2013 with XNY, which was a duo. What was the journey like from the duo to the solo project?
Oh man, it was, XNY was seriously like some of the most fun I've ever had. It's just having that kind of band where it's just two people and you can really feed off of each other and grow together. It was really a beautiful band. Like from that moment, I really just wanted to get more into production and get more into like a really intimate, personal songwriting process. And I think with a band, especially like X and Y, where it's like as much freedom as you have, because it's only two people, so it's only two opinions. It really, our whole thing was to keep it as two people. So like the dynamics of the sonic landscape were really specific. It was very much guitar, drums, vocals, and not much else. And I think with Tomi and starting that project, I just wanted to dive into like a sonic landscape, experimentation, like give myself more freedom to create whatever I wanted and whatever I was feeling, which is also why this record is so exciting to me, because it's such a different direction than previous songs I've released, because it's like stripped down everything to the basics and I'm just going to build it up from there, because dude, the pandemic got me. You know what I mean? It got everybody. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of layers.
It's a lot of layers. You did talk about that in one of the things I read, that you said sometimes we have to leave everything behind in order to evolve, which sounds like what you're doing, which is stripping the music down. But I think you're also talking about stripping your life down. How do those two dovetail?
Yeah, I started to meditate. I got really into, over the last year, I've gotten really into stripping back everything, like stripping back social time, like people. I think a lot of people like realized who were healthy and like positive friends and humans in their lives during this time, and like who was really there and who you wanted to be there for. And I think that just like that alone stripped back so much and like gave me a lot of time to myself to reflect. And I really like went back to the basics, like eat well, meditate, go for walks, go for runs. It was like doing basic human activities to just stay healthy in all senses, because it was just such a, the last like decade, seriously, since changing from XNY to Tomi has been like just a really intense ride, because it's not, there's like no one else to lean on. So it feels, I don't know. I just, it's like you have to get yourself together and strong if you want to do more with your life, you know? You know, you got a family.
I got a family. But yeah, as you get older and as everyone has their own shit, including yourself, looking externally for answers or to feel good about yourself gets harder and harder. And then you go, well, maybe I can't look outside. Maybe I got to look inside, and that some things that seem real one day are not real the next. And that's the only thing that changes is your perception.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
All right, let's hear a song. First one up is Right Through Me. What's the story behind it?
This song is exactly about what we were just saying. It's about, it's about like feeling like you need outside validation and really realizing that everything is within you. And it's about feeling transparent for good or bad. It's just about being like, this is, I feel like it's like basically saying, I feel like everyone can see right through me and I don't even know what is there anymore. And it's just kind of reflecting on that thought. So anyways, here it is.
Here we go. Right Through Me, live from Tomi here on HRN.org.
I just want to feel a bit more alive. My body in the back, see my mind in the front. I just want to feel a little less stuck. Gotta keep moving on the path, as strange as it might be. It's just a feeling that I have. Passing through me, I just can't hide it.
Right through me.
want to feel a bit more alive. I just want to be there when I open my eyes.
So, amazing song. Hits home. Probably pretty close to home, given what I feel like I've been going through the last few weeks. You know, obviously the pandemic hit us all in different ways, and I'd love to talk about how it maybe hit you creatively. I think as an artist, there's no way not to internalize world events, personal events, and then try and make sense of it and put it back out into the world for your either yourself or to connect with, which seems to have taken the form of this Sweet Sweet Honey EP.
I think
what was the story behind it? You know, what's what did you take? What did you filter? What did you put back out?
Yeah, so I think the biggest change, especially as a musician, was, and I know a lot of musicians have felt this way, is the not being able to perform or like play, even like collaborate and play with people in the room was such a shock. Like it was an identity crisis. Like I truly like personally, just from my experience, it was just like one of those things where I was like, if I don't have that, like that's like the main reason why why I play music is just that connection. And, you know, like catching that like unexplainable energy in a room is really beautiful. And I think not being able to have that was such an intense experience that I was like, okay, what does music mean to me? I mean, I released two EPs through a major label, went through that system and came out right before the pandemic without a label, without a team, and really like started from scratch. And so I had like a big come to Jesus moment of just like, what do I want to sound like? And what's been going on in the last decade? Why do I feel so lost? And like, how do I find myself again? So this record I actually wrote as a secret. I like didn't, I wasn't going to release it. I was just going to like heal like myself and try to like understand how to be a better person and a better like friend and a better family member and just be better. And I think in doing so and in writing this music, I'm really proud of what it is. And it's not anything that I've ever released before. It's just like it's like a total starting from scratch, starting at the root moment.
But in writing and creating for something that you think no one else is going to hear, that's got to be liberating and allow you to go in a different direction than going, is this going to hit? Are people going to like this?
Yeah. And I was like, I flew, I was in LA and I flew home after this really intense breakup. And I didn't have a place to stay in LA because of the pandemic. And I felt pretty lost. And I flew home and was like, I just need to heal myself. I don't want to like, I really was almost like, I want to kill Tomi. Like, I don't even know what I want. And writing this was the most liberating thing. I just used like my dad's guitar and like all the drums in the record, which there's a few moments, are all just me like hitting a desk. Like everything is just whatever I had around. And I just didn't really, I wasn't concerned about it sounding professional. I just wanted it to sound like, I wanted to like feel it more than anything.
Yeah. I mean, that's a beautiful sentiment just to try and capture feelings and put some form to them, which I think is something that we've all been trying to do in the last year and a half.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And like get it out of your body and out of your mind and put it somewhere.
Yeah. And the fact that you can take those, put it out to music, and then it's, I mean, if not physical, say like, okay, like I've time stamped it, I've purged it. I hope people connect with it, but now I can move on to the next creative endeavor.
Totally. Exactly. It's nice. And it's so much about like grief and like healing that I do feel like it's something I hopefully the other people can connect with and that it can help them in some capacity.
Yeah. And I think it ties into the next track they're going to play, Who Was I? which
yes.
again seems like a very reflective looking backwards and then contemplating who that person was. But tell me in your own words what the story is behind that song.
This song is about identity and the loss of identity. And really, I think from my experience, like being in a long-term relationship, as beautiful as it was, it's really easy to get lost in somebody else's perception of you. Mm-hmm. And this is about almost needing that person's gaze to tell you who you are. And when it's not there, feeling like, oh shit, like I don't even know who I am without this person next to me. Like, how am I going to stand up on my own two feet? And this, it's about wanting that feeling again, that safety, but knowing that you have to move forward to find yourself in a stronger place. So here we go.
Here we go. Who Was I by Tomi, here live on HRN.org.
So I was taking out my old trash bin. A photo fell out that I threw in. It was you and me in a country scene. That picture can move, it would move through me. And if it could talk, it would talk for me. Whoever told me that love was just a fun game I played once, nobody won. Whoever told me that love was just a key. And if I could handle it, then it could handle me. If I wasn't your love, then who was I? Who was I? If I wasn't your love, then who was I? Who was I? So I went away. Walking down that old dirt road, the one that weaves behind my parents' home, and a leaf blew down right at my feet, and I stopped and stared like it would speak to me. Everything that comes will go. It's meant for me someday. Till then I'll walk each step alone and watch the leaves change from dead to green to gold. Whoever told you that I wasn't the one? 'Cause I love you more now than I ever did. I'm never done. I just wanna be there lying on your couch watching sitcoms on repeat while the dog runs around. Thinking you, well, I'm wondering why. keeps going on, and still our picture never dies.
Awesome song. Very reflective. It's, man, so much inward looking. It's so interesting to go through this slow moving global trauma tragedy together and have it feel so uniquely personal, and then at the same time so global, but also not unifying in any way.
Totally. Isn't it? And it's so, isn't it bizarre that everyone is going through the same thing? I mean, obviously on different levels, but it's like we're all experiencing this one moment together as humans. It's really, really, it's so, it blows my mind. I can't even fathom it.
Yeah. I cannot. And because I think when you start digging in and trying to compare it, it's just, I mean, it's like you said, it's like you got to just see what is your own experience. And that's sort of what you got to stack it up against.
Absolutely. And try, and hopefully connect with other people about it.
Yeah. Allow us to, I don't want to say lighten the mood because it's not like we're having a heavy talk, but it is very rare that anyone, especially any band, ever brought us any food on the show. And you and Jacob brought these ribs. Which I still think about when you came on as X and Y.
Yes.
And we talked a little bit about cooking then, but I wanted to check in to see what you're cooking now, what food you made at your parents' house, if you dip back into childhood favorites, or was there like a mommy make me dinner type of thing?
Okay, so first of all, those ribs have won countless rib competitions.
I buy it.
It's sweet. It's salty. I mean, these are this is a classic Jacob Pam excursion.
No, it's I think about them in the Tupperware they came in, and I remember eating them on the air with no shame.
No shame.
No shame.
Yeah, I love those ribs. I think about them almost every day. I've been eating a lot of Italian. I come from an Italian family. When I was back home, it was pasta, chicken parm, chicken piccata, lots of chicken. I mean, we went all out. I'm like, I was making pasta last night. I was like, I just need my roots.
Comfort and food.
Comfort and food. I'm also a huge sushi fan, so I did dabble in a lot of sushi when I was back home. That New York life.
That New York sushi.
My mouth is watering.
It's a pricey, New York sushi is a pricey dabbling.
It is. I know. It's actually, you can have like, it's like one meal a day.
Yeah.
If that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know the track Lemon Tree, which I believe you're going to close the show out with, is about looking backwards and things like that. But I gotta ask, gotta hope. Are you picking lemons these days? Are you making anything with lemons? I mean, a boy can dream of a food and music show, can he? That's more than just a name only.
Oh my God, I should make lemon candies for the shows, for merch. Wow, you just blew my mind. I am picking a lot of lemons. My sister sent me a lemon tree for the album, or for the song release. So I have a lemon tree growing now in my yard. It hasn't brought any, you know, lemons to the surface, but
I mean, soon. we have a lime tree, and it's like the guys are like, yeah, in 4 years you'll get a lime. Like, okay. Sweet.
The trees are interesting. There's actually, I've heard that an avocado tree can only grow and produce avocados if there's another avocado tree right near it. Isn't that interesting? This is what I've heard.
Yeah,
listen, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, right in.
Right.
But yes, well, now you have a lemon tree, and now you can listen to it under your own lemon tree. What a beautiful thing.
Yeah, and the smell of lemons, now I'm like forever just hearing the song in my head.
Yeah, we have a grapefruit tree that flowers every once in a while. And it's just like California citrus, baby.
I know, paradise.
Cannot fight it. Well, listen, I want to make sure, because I know this last song is a bit of an epic, so I want to make sure we have enough time to hear it. If people want to check out the EP, if people want to check out the music, they want to follow along, see what you're up to, tour dates, fingers crossed, live shows.
Yes, February.
February. Enough of these fall plans, Delta variant memes. I know. Get back to shows.
Exactly. Yeah, if you want to hear any, the name Tomi.com, so it's spelled out the name Tomi.com, and that's also my Instagram handle. Yeah, all the info's on there, and the EP comes out October 8th, so check it out.
Amazing. Well, thank you. Thank you for sitting down again. I think the universe had a plan, and I think we knocked it out even more.
I think so, too. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, yeah. And thank you to Vonda for the last episode that we found that we recorded back in March 2020 that somehow lost in the shuffle that opened up the show. What a beautiful story of family and food. We have another episode next week, but here we go. Tomi, Lemon Tree is a single here on Snacky Tunes on HRN.org. We'll see you next time.
Shines.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody. I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.